There's enough cash in the financial system, and there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve. An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
Don't you want somebody that don't
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I had been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now.
Find somebody to love. Don't you
on this trend has been margin called.
If you was a hook, trust if your idols, now they got you shook. Believe in the crooks, hell of a saint. Are they cooking the books? Save up a decade, now I said a day. Another new rap, just getting away. Bigger the bank, bigger rebel effect. When it all blows off, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass, inside the success. Pull back the curtain, so what do you get? And it's the risk with a good tippy net. Made from your savings, and 401k. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialized lessons while we've been the game. First to fall in this reckless war. Cause you're just a pawn in the fertility stream.
Money talks, you pay for the show. Pay for the crowd, pay for the thrill. Pay for the media to lie to our face. The truth, so we repeat our mistakes. Sells the dream that never delivers. What we're hearing fees, including the tickets, siphoning funds from a mouthless bigot. Blindly the blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth. Commingled the risks so nobody knows. The higher we go to a damaged collateral. Another excuse for oppressive control. The government capture is out of play. Reapers of value at the end of the day. We're calling for help, but nobody came. We bail out to pawns and completers.
When money deeply rots at the core, don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex and fallible, humans left in checked. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked, and our economy's a lot of GX.
What would happen if we take our money out of its systems? Why protest our labor when we can pull out our capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Simply by holding purpose and power. How do we build a base? Replace the contilling effects with the will of free markets.
Step one.
Build an independent system to remove the risk of corruption.
Step two.
Move our savings into that system so no one can ever touch it.
Step three.
Earn, save, spend, trade. All activities move this way. With our own money, everything changed. We no longer positive to you.
Tired of my desire, earning my work, and with time, earning a larger piece of pie, or even yours to verify. Money is the art of who I want to win, that's to keep scoring of politicians, coming and capturing part of the place, and we reap the value at the end of the day.
So we can move value without being censored. Move on from gambling, saving. Move on from all of the politics. Move on to the elevated internet.
So we don't have to trust every word that they say. So a freedom of mind can be taken away.
So we treat and punish all the same.
So we can end the control of this game.
Knowing the truth will break the frame. Now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Open the door, it's the game.
Good morning, everybody, and I hope you had a fantastic weekend. This is the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, episode 91, and I am your host, Coleman, and I want to say thank you for joining us today on this Monday morning. And I guess depending on what part of the country you're in, you're dealing with a lot of cold and snow, or it's just another day for you. So I hope everyone's doing good out there and staying safe. We have a featured guest, one of my first Bitcoiners that I started to follow and became really really big in me kind of going down this rabbit hole. And so that is Lawrence Lepard. I sent you an invite, Larry. Let's see. I got it right here. Perfect. So I'm bringing you up on stage. So I'm really looking forward to this. In case everyone's been unaware, just kind of been off the Twitter for the last couple of weeks, Lawrence just finished up his book, The Big Print, What Happened to America and How Sound Money Will Fix It. So I look forward into diving into this, asking you some questions about the book, who the book's catered to, what we can kind of expect, and the release date. And then I definitely want to dive into some macro and some of your predictions for 2025. But before we go ahead and bring and welcome Lawrence, I just want to say good morning to everybody out there. Bob, Jordan, Yomar, Death and Bitcoin. I don't see Penny up here yet, but Don Bay in the audience, I'm going to bring you up here, sir. L, I just want to say good morning. But good morning, Larry. How was your Christmas holiday?
Oh, it's great. Thank you. Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on your show. Always enjoy talking to you guys. Yeah, everything was great. I was pretty hectic. The book was finished. The manuscript was finished on 12/29, and it's now in layout. The process of kind of turning it into a properly laid out book. And so, I've never done this before. I don't know how long it's going to take. It could take just a few weeks, and maybe I'll be able to release it in January or mid to late January. I don't know. It could take a bit longer. Maybe it's early February, but it's in process. So, the pre-order is up for the Kindle version. You can't pre-order. They won't let you pre-order hard and paper copy, but, and then there'll be an audio format to follow. Yeah, it's coming along. I've been busy, but it's, frankly, it's been nice to have it done because it was, I wrote it in 6 months and it was, it was time consuming and stressful, but, I feel like it's as good as I can produce. And so it's done.
Did you find that it was pretty easy for you to write it, or did it just seem like a lot of labor?
No. It was super easy. It just flowed out of me. But getting, kind of some of the details and quotes and so on and so forth, obviously takes time. I mean, ChatGPT is a game changer in terms of some of the historical stuff I was able to dig out quickly. But, it flew from me, and maybe I should, people want to hear about the book. So I want to give you kind of my standard, preface on the book. This is a group effort is the best way to say it. And I have basically leaned on a lot of other people who've done a lot of great work before me, and a lot of their work is in this book. And so, a lot of credit should go to Safe, who's probably written the most important economics book the last 100 years. I think it'll be, regarded as that in the future. And also Lynn and Jeff and Alex Gladstein, and I mean, the list is too long to name, Luke Groman, et cetera. So, I mean, it's a lot of people's work, including mine, pulling it all together. And, people say, well, what did you write a book for? What was the book? How did this happen, and why did you do it? And it's a pretty simple story. I was sitting around last spring, watching something related to the political world, which I generally try and avoid, but I don't know, my wife dragged me into it, and I was watching CNN or something. And I watched all these, blue people and red people screaming at each other and, talking past each other and talking about stuff that frankly really matter. And I just got so angry and frustrated that, nobody, here we have theoretically intelligent people, on a national media outlet talking about stuff that doesn't even matter, when there's one central issue. It's like the elephant in the room that really does matter, which is the money being broken. And I thought to myself, why can't these people see it? And then, there have been some really great books written, and maybe I don't need to read a book because, just tell people to read the Bitcoin Standard or read Lynn's book or Jeff's book. But frankly, they're all a little textbooky, and people tend to not read textbooks. In fact, people tend to not read at all anymore. Everyone gets stuff audio and via pod, but some people do, and the boomer crowd probably does. And so I thought to myself, well, maybe if I made this more of a story and a narrative about, how I've lived in the sound money world, gold before Bitcoin and then Bitcoin emerged and all that, maybe that'd make it a little more interesting. And maybe I can kind of summarize it and hit the highlights without, going deep down like a couple of those other books do. I mean, and they're fabulous books, don't get me wrong. And so what I tried to write was a book that the average person could read, no financial background, coming into this totally cold. Read this book, and then you will understand why you're being screwed and what you have to do to solve that. And so that's the mission of the book. My mission is to orange pill 330 million Americans and 8 billion people around the world. And it's a rather ambitious mission. I don't know if I'll accomplish it, but I did the best that I could in putting all of that on paper. So that's kind of the background of how I got to the stage I'm at right now, which is very nervous pre-publishing. Want to just make sure that it gets laid out correctly. I'm pretty confident that the content's good. I know Bitcoiners are going to love it. That's not the problem. The issue is, can it jump outside of the Bitcoin world? Can I get it into the airports? Can I get a big publisher to pick it up? I mean, they all wanted to, look at it, think about it, take a year to publish it. And I was like, no, you can't do that. It's happening too fast. So I'm just self-publishing on Amazon. Then I hope the publisher will pick it up and put it in the airports. And, because we just want everybody to read it, right? I mean, that's the goal. So That's a long-winded answer to your question, but I figure it's a good preface to our discussion.
No, that's perfect. Hey, Larry, oh, go ahead, Bob. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to jump in and say, hey, Larry, I appreciate the fact that your book is not news dependent, right? Because it seems as though there are lots of books that are coming out here in the new year related to Bitcoin, but some are being held off because of potentially like a strategic Bitcoin reserve and other news. And so I'm happy to hear that yours is coming out no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's a lot of it's the history. I mean, you gotta, you know, I mean, one of the advantages I bring to the space compared to some of the younger people in the space is that I've lived this life, you know, as an investor since the early 80s. So I watched this whole monetary system kind of devolve into the monster that it is right now. And I remember it. And so I can tell anecdotes about it. And I think that hopefully that'll make the book more interesting than just kind of a textbook. So, yeah. And it's not news dependent. I mean, in fact, I mentioned, I think I've got a paragraph on the strategic Bitcoin reserve and Trump winning and so forth. But that's it's kind of a, you know, at the tail end of the story, right? The story's goes back quite a ways before that. So.
Is the book geared to help? Because I know you were really big into gold, prior to Bitcoin. Is the book catered to try and persuade some of the gold investors to?
Absolutely. And that's why I put sound money on the cover and not Bitcoin on the cover. And I, you know, so it's absolutely that way. And I, you know, as everyone knows, you know, I'm one of the few people that I'll still defend gold. You know, it's obviously inferior to Bitcoin on a go forward basis, but you know, on a volatility basis, it's lower and it's the second best sound money in the world with Bitcoin being the best. And so, you know, I think for older people, much older people who don't like the possibility of a big down, it's not a bad choice. You know, it obviously doesn't have the upside that Bitcoin has. So yeah, it speaks to both of those issues. And, you know, I've always kind of viewed my role in this whole thing as trying to orange pill gold bugs because they've got the problem right. They just often don't understand that this is the correct solution. And so I've tried to deal with all of their objections and without shitting on gold, because I think, you know, if you're trying to convince somebody to do something, you don't want to shit on what they're doing right now. I mean, that just pisses them off. What you want to try and do is win them over to our way of seeing things. And that's what I've tried to do.
That's like the Scott Horton quote is, you know, attacking the right from the right and the left from the left, like meet people where they are. It's just a better approach to.
Yeah,
winning somebody over to your side.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me our goal is to get onto a Bitcoin standard as soon as possible. And to do that, we got to change hearts and minds. And so, you know, you do that, I mean, as Saylor says, you know, cheerfully and constructively. And so I've tried to be cheerful and constructive with everybody except the central bankers. The book is pretty rough on the central bankers and Bernanke in particular. And I don't know, some people say I've gone over the pale. My wife thinks I went over the pale in terms of my attacks on him. I think the Overton window's shifting and I'm okay, but you know, I'm kind of right at the edge of the pale for sure. Cause Bernanke he doesn't get much love in this book. In fact, he really gets crucified in this book, as he should be, in my opinion. So it is what it is.
Larry, I think that's what we all love about you is that you're always at the edge. And I think that's exactly what we need in this fight. So thank you for being on the edge.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, she says, look, you did that and that's not going to get on CNBC. And, you know, maybe not. I don't know. CNBC's changing. And I'm not sure I want to be on this show that, you know, has basically a criminal, Jim Cramer, you know, touting stocks to dumb people. I mean, that's, you know, fuck that show. But I, you know, I do want to get broad distribution of the book. I mean, I want to sell a lot of books, not because I want to make a lot of money, but because I just, you know, that's how, you know, we've got to take this from narrow to wide. And now is our moment. I mean, we're, you know, and the biggest thing we've got to overcome, I think, and actually Max did a fabulous, fabulous foreword to the book. I mean, couldn't have been better. And he just makes the point of, you know, you're just not too late. I don't think a lot of people, I know in my crowd, a lot of people are dealing with, oh, I'm too late. You know, 100,000 is just too high. And I'm like, no, it's not. You know, it's going to a million, then it's going to 10. So, you know, think of it in those terms. And the book is kind of addresses that, but, I think, you know, I know a lot of people who are feeling like they missed it. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, Max, I had lunch with Max in Abu Dhabi and he's telling me, hey, you know, I feel like I missed it because I was paying, you know, a dollar when Trace Meyer was paying 25 cents. You know, I mean, no matter when you get in, you feel like you missed it, but you got to just get in because it's where we're going.
Yeah. I think that's a great point that a lot of people miss, you know, like we always, no matter when you bought Bitcoin, unless it was like, you know, right off the bat, you're going to feel late. You know, like I bought it. It was, I think around 40,000 when I started buying. And, you know, I continued buying after it dipped, but I still felt very late, you know, but somebody buying today is going to look at my price and be like, oh, I wish I had that price. And I think that's just a cycle that's going to, continue.
Exactly. And I just say, hey, look, you know, in 6 or 7 years when it's a million, aren't you going to regret not buying it at 100? I mean, there just aren't any, you know, there just aren't any other assets that are performing in this fashion and, you know, that have this kind of asymmetry with what I consider to be relatively limited risk. I mean, the only other way to get 10 baggers is to be invested in equities, and every equity has a management team, and, you know, management teams make mistakes and things change. And yeah, you can occasionally have one that'll do extremely well, but it's pretty tough. And so to me, you know, there's really never been an opportunity for the average person to beat the system, in the way that an early adopter now of Bitcoin can do. I've never seen anything like it. So, and that's what I'm trying to convey with the book. That's the point of the book.
One of the things I thought was interesting, I actually wrote an article recently, about Bitcoin, and one of the sections, was addressing the FUD of you are too late. And, I got from, BitInfo charts. They had a chart of like the different addresses, like the wallets and the balances in those wallets. When you look at that, like you can see like, you know, obviously, you know, maybe one Bitcoin's out of reach for a lot of people, but you know, just getting like to half a Bitcoin or like a small amount of Bitcoin, like, you know, that's pretty accessible. And when you look at like how many people are there, you know, if you were to think of it in terms of like that percentage of owning Bitcoin versus that percentage of owning like the current, like your ownership of the current monetary system, it kind of puts it into perspective.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, even if you're doing moderately well right now, you know, if you're like, you know, upper middle class, you don't own, you probably have more access to own a significant portion of, the existing Bitcoin than you do of the existing monetary system. And I think that's some, like a perspective that a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah. The math is really clear. I mean, owning one coin is going to be a big deal. I mean, being a whole coiner will be a big deal, you know, 50 years from now. It is what it is. I mean, but it takes time for people to go down the hole and see it. And it takes, you know, repeated explanation. And hopefully this book will, you know, provide some of that. And that was the goal. And, you know, we'll see if I've achieved it. I mean, obviously some people think I have, but you know, there'll be critics too. And we'll just see. It's an interesting experiment, right? And I'm not doing a second one. This is it. But it's out there, and, or I should say it will be out there very soon. And, you know, people will have a chance to look at it, and hopefully it will get, you know, some viral love. And that's the idea. I mean, there are 330 million people in this country. I mean, if we can't sell a bunch of these, then something's wrong, you know, but we'll have to see.
And I have a link for the pre-order for Kindle up there in the Nest if anybody's wondering.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, one thing I would say, you know, Amazon has these algorithms in terms of ratings, reviews, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, even if you don't want the Kindle, if you want to buy a hard copy, you want to buy a, you know, whatever, order the Kindle. I'll tell you before it's going to come out, a week before it's going to come out, I'll tell you, and you can cancel it, right? But meanwhile, you'll have rigged their algorithm. They think there's a lot of demand for this thing. And then you can turn around and buy the hard copy. So it's $10 if you can, please, just order the Kindle, because if we can get, you know, a lot of pre-sales, that moves me up in all the Amazon ranks, and it'll help, you know, make it a, you know, closer to being a hot book. And that's obviously what we want. You know, we want to get some kind of viral, you know, attention to it. So, you know, that's the game. I mean, they, you know, sadly they won't let you pre-order the hard copy or the paperback. I don't know why. I guess it's just the way it's set up over there.
Yeah, no worries.
Are you doing your self-publishing through Amazon?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, they're the printer. I mean,
Okay, yeah, I think they print like as soon as you, order it, which is probably why you can't do a pre-order till it's like on there ready to go. But
right.
But that's also awesome. Like, I mean, everybody out there, go order the Kindle version, and especially, you know, look out. We'll have to have you back on when it actually like hits so we can kind of pump it again.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, I will also have a website for the book. I'll also sell them in discount. I'll also sign them anywhere, any show I'm at. I'm happy to sign them. People have asked me to read it, and I just don't have that much time. I'm trying to run another couple businesses and everything else, and I don't know how to read a book. So I'm not going to read it. I got Walker America reading it for me. I think he's got a great voice, a good guy. And so, the audiobook will follow. It won't be probably ready on day one. Day one will probably only be the paperback, and the Kindle. The hard copy, hardcover will probably follow a little thereafter. And then the audiobook will follow maybe a month or so thereafter as soon as Walker finishes his work. And then,
well, Larry, as an avid audiobook reader, I think I'd listened to 53 last year.
Wow.
I will definitely get the hard copy also, cause that's just one that I think is going to be just part of the Bitcoin lexicon of books.
Well, I appreciate that. And obviously people buy a couple copies is great. And that I'll have a website. Eventually I'll print them myself, off of Amazon. Sell, you know, I'll offer deep, deep discounts for people who want to buy them in bulk, you know, to hand them out to friends. So they'll be, you know, you won't have to pay the full price for bulk orders and all that kind of stuff. And then some people said I should do some kind of a premium version where I do a number thing and I'll write a dedication, whatever you want me to write, and sign my name and all that. And I guess, I don't know, it sounds kind of crazy, but maybe I'll end up doing some of that. But, for starters, I mean, the critical thing in my opinion, get the paperback out and try and get it in as many hands as possible because, you know, I mean, things, you know, we're going to move to the macro discussion, I assume, in this conversation, and things are happening fast. And that's why, you know, the book ain't perfect, but it's good enough. And so my view is I really want to get it out in January, early February. I really want to try and get it spreading, you know, before we hit 200, 500, a million, you know, which I think we're going to do. So
that, Larry, you basically just said our motto around here. We're not perfect, but we're good enough.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, I guess the military thinks in those terms, right? You know, well executed, decent plan is better than a perfect plan.
Absolutely.
Good enough is perfect.
Yeah.
So we have, Don Bay and Gary Cardone, with their hands up. Gentlemen, I'm not sure who had their hand up first, so, I'll let you two decide who wants to ask your question.
I don't have a question. I just was going to say, Larry, you mentioned signing books. You know, Bitcoiners, you also mentioned the airport. Bitcoiners travel a lot. So maybe a signed book and then you put 10 books in the airport on the shelf. I mean, I don't know how they'll track the sales because, you know, it'll be just put there by a Bitcoiner, but we'll stack them, you know?
That sounds great, Don.
Put a QR code on it for, like, you know, X amount of sats.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. Yeah. And I also, they will be available for sats outside of Amazon. I'm working with Newt Svenholm who's going to, he said he can sell them for sats. And so, look, we'll get all this stuff figured out over time. I've never published a book before, so I don't really know what I'm doing here. I mean, I'm confident in the manuscript, but the process of publishing it actually is a little bit new to me. So there'll probably be some, you know, clunkiness and missteps, but we'll get it sorted out. I've talked to Safe about it. I mean, he may ultimately put it on his website. It would be great. I don't know. He hasn't responded, but, you know, my view is, we just want to get, you know, we want to orange pill millions and millions of people, right? And we want to try and save as many average people as we possibly can. Cause, you know, every day average people are hurting all over the world. It's just incredibly sad what's going on. And, you know, that's the message of the book that, you know, if we want to, I mean, we can fix this. There's a lot of optimism and a lot of great things happening. Decentralization is going to make the world a much better place. Technology is going to make the world a much better place. Already has. It's going to get much better. Central banks, they're going into the dustbin of history. But, you know, my view is the issue is how quick, you know, and sooner is better than later because I'm not getting any younger. So that's, you know, therefore the push to try and get this into a ton of hands as quickly as we possibly can.
Gary, I'm going to let you go ahead and fire your question,
hey.
Sir.
Yeah, thank you very much. Not a question, actually. But it's going to be a command to the crypto army. Lawrence is an awesome human being, known him for a couple of years. He's doing leadership work for the Bitcoin community. Well, guys, what we need is 500 people right now. I'm driving. I can't. But when I get home, first thing I'm going to do is order the Kindle version. All of you guys can afford 10 bucks, okay, to support Cat. And what you're really supporting is the Bitcoin community. So everybody, okay, take 5 minutes, go spend 10 bucks, get Gary known to the world. And that means we're going to get Bitcoin known to the world. Larry, if there's anything I can do with putting a link to the book or how people buy it, I'll stick it on my websites. I'll stick it on all my spaces.
Thanks, Gary.
Let's roll as an army together, guys.
Absolutely. You're a great friend and I really respect you. And, I'm going to DM you after this, get you a copy of it, all that kind of stuff. But I really appreciate the support. And yeah, I'm with you. I mean, just as much as we can get this thing moving, you know, I mean, humans move in herds and people follow trends. And so if we can say, hey, we've sold X number of these things in this amount of time and it's really going, you know, gangbusters, that'll bring more people into the party. And that's the goal, right? We just got to bring as many people into this Bitcoin party as we possibly can. So thanks, Gary. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, dude, I appreciate everything you're doing. It's, don't want to overuse the word, but I think it's almost God's work.
Well, I got to tell you, it felt, you know, when I was writing this thing, I felt really inspired. I mean, I thought it through and there were a lot of times I had doubts because I thought, you know, I can't really match what Lynn wrote. I can't really match what Jeff wrote. I can't really match what Safe wrote. Those are great books and those guys I can't match what Luke Roman writes every week. I mean, you know, these people are geniuses, but then I thought, you know what you can do, Larry? You're pretty good at explaining shit. And I think you could pull together all that crap in a way that an average person could read it. And the test case I used was actually my wife, who doesn't know anything about finance. She's a lovely person, but finance just in her area. And, I said, look, do you understand this? And she said, yeah, but you got to change this. And there's a whole chapter in there, actually, that was her idea, the skepticism chapter, where she said, you know, you got to do a chapter that kind of talks about how every new technology, when it comes out, doesn't get approved. You know, like when I started with the Luddites and then I went to the, you know, the Red Flag Act, and I went through the scares about electricity. I used Lynn's meme for the electricity and the dangers of electricity and so on and so forth. So again, I've just tried to really grab the best of this community, everybody else's thoughts and writings and ideas, and coalesce them into a book that makes it really easy for somebody who doesn't know anything of this stuff to understand, you know? I mean, there are people in America who are hurting really bad and they don't understand why. You know, or they listen to the politicians and, it's the greedy corporation. That's horseshit. It's not the greedy corporations. It's the greedy central banks and the cantillionaires who've rigged this system against everybody. And this book makes that abundantly clear. I mean, I don't hold back any punches. I go after these guys like full blast, you know, hitting them right in the face and they deserve to be hit in the face. So, you know, that is what it is. But I think a lot of people will read it and they'll go, God damn, he's right. He's right. I am getting screwed and this is why. And, you know, I'm going to pick up, if Bitcoin's is the weapon, I'm going to pick it up and let's go charge the castle. You know, that's the whole message, right? So let's hope we can get it to go viral. That's the key. That's really the key.
Looks like, Satoshi has a hand up.
Okay, wow. Well, it looks like I'm impressed, and I don't get impressed often. I'm going to move to silence. So basically, if you were bald, Mr. Lawrence, I would call you the Wayne Dyer of Bitcoin. Do you know Wayne Dyer?
He lives in Maui. I kind of vaguely know who he is. I don't know much about him. He wrote some good books, right?
He sounds like you. Oh, okay. You are channeling his energy right now. Okay. Probably
maybe.
Not.
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. I'm admiring you because Wayne Dyer is an eloquent, like, down to earth, studied every like textbook in the planet to just give motivating advice to the world, guru type figure. And when I hear you speak, I haven't read your book yet. What is it called? Yeah. The Big Print?
Big Print.
But yeah. That's fine print, big print, it's obvious. Oh my goodness, so clever. Okay, so anyways, the cleverness too, that goes the Wayne Dyer thing. Sorry to repeat, he's one of my role models that I never met. Anyways, I came to say, not that. I came to say, like, probably also the way you could finance it is, like, if, like, the serial number of every single book that goes out is coordinated with an ordinal, and then people just feel like they're pretty much just buying the book, but then they also get the ordinal, what they have to onboard, but you put a little slip of paper in there that has a QR code on like how to onboard. So you could sell a collection. Every single book could be also an onboarding tool for free. Like the cost of them like minting or like redeeming their ordinal that came with the book, that would be free, but it wouldn't be free. Nothing's free. Like the gas has to be paid, but that would be paid by sponsors like the wallets and the people in between, the providers. Anyways, the system could be made with ordinal where your books could be connected to your books. fails, and everybody that gets it also gets the ordinal. If they figured out how to get it, they happen to be in their own network state, which is also called an NFT or a community. And it can all be done seamlessly in the interconnected web. And I know how to build that stuff. And congratulations, you can do it too.
Well, thank you. Yeah, DM me about it. I'll look at it. Right now, I'm just going to keep it simple and just try to sell the basic book, as many of them as we can. That's, you know, I'm a simple guy. And, you know, and I think the book is understandable by anybody. And that's why I wrote it, really. Cause I felt like there's a hole in the market for books in this area. And that's what I tried to address.
Hey, Larry, so I got a couple questions for you. Oh, am I talking over you, Omar?
I was double muted. My bad. So go ahead, Coleman.
Yeah. So Larry, so, I'd like to get your thoughts on the new administration and kind of what hurdles do you think they're going to face? Like, do you think Elon's going to be able to make all the cuts that he wants to do, and how that's going to implement or how that's going to affect kind of Trump? Because with what Trump wants to do and what Elon wants to do, I think they're kind of going in opposite directions. So I'd like to get your thought on that.
Yeah. It's, you know, politics is always so messy, and with Trump even more so. But look, first of all, I'm incredibly glad this side won, you know, because they're a lot better than the other side. But politicians in general are not something that I like or I'm in love with. I think Vivek and Trump have, you know, their hearts are in the right place, and the notion of cutting back government spending is a good idea. There's a lot of government excess. Probably more importantly, it's just cutting back government regulation, red tape, bureaucracy, all that crap. It's just horrible. But, I mean, I see that in my investment management industry. I mean, I just had to fill out a FinCEN form and a bunch of other crap. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about what they're going to do with Doge, because that's the big thing that's got the stock market rallying, and everybody is, you know, all hyped up on how they're just going to, you know, cut all these expenses out, and the budget's going to balance, and it's all going to be good, you know. And, look, I mean, and this is kind of like, you know, Elon in 2018 saying, you know, these cars are going to be self-driving instantly, and be able to rent your car as a taxi. Well, I've been in a Tesla recently. They're actually goddamn good. I mean, I'm really amazed at how far they've come, but it's 2024, not 2018, you know, 2019. And I think he's doing the same thing here. He's projecting out a ways, and it's going to be hard to take the costs, enough costs out of this deficit. There are two chapters in the book. One is called Stein's Law, which is, everyone knows, is when something, you know, if something cannot go on forever, it will end, which is how I kind of view the fiscal situation in the U.S. The other is called Nothing Stops This Train, which I borrowed from Lynn with her permission. And it talks about how bad the budget deficit is. And what's going on, you know, is that we've got $6.75 trillion of federal government spending, annualized run rate, and 80% of that, almost 80% of that, are in areas that are extremely hard to touch. Social Security, Medicare, you know, you kind of got three or so in that, and a little over three in those two areas. And you've got interest expense running at like 1.2 and higher right now. Then you've got defense, it's another trillion. So, you know, by the time you kind of look at those, you know, you're really, what you're trying to cut from the 20%. And so, you know, 20% of 6.75 is, I don't know, 1.3, 1.35, something like that. I mean, you know, you're going to wipe it all out, but you can't do that. So the notion that they can cut things, unless they decide they want to do a 40% whack at Social Security and Medicare and close all the military bases and cut the defense budget by half, you know, the notion that we're going to fix our fiscal situation quickly is just not correct. Let me say, but the, you know, the idea that they're going in that direction, that's all good. I mean, I'm a big supporter in cutting back. Other thing that's important, I think it's important that he picked Bessent. I like Lutnick a lot. I think, you know, he's a Bitcoiner hardcore, but, you know, this is brain surgery. I mean, we really got a complicated meth fiscal and debt situation in this country, and you need somebody who understands it and understands that probably a reset is going to be necessary, like Bretton Woods. And Bessent gets that, and he said he gets it. He's talked about it in various podcasts and so on. He's also a gold holder. He's also said he thinks some digital assets have great value. So it implies to me that he understands what Bitcoin is. And so, you know, I think, and I talk about this in the book, I think the way out of this mess is to do a monetary reset, which would be quite inflationary once. And then after that, we'll be on sound money again. And so, you know, I don't know to what extent Trump fully understands all this. I mean, we saw him speak in Nashville, and They launched Trump Coin, and I mean, there are pieces of Trump's understanding of Bitcoin that, in my view, are not very complete. But he's being advised by good people, and he's going to do the right thing if he pardons Ross, and if he, I'd like to see him make Bitcoin legal tender so there's no tax to be paid on it, but. Whether they do that or not, who knows? I think that Bitcoin Strategic Reserve is a very good thing. I think they are going to do it. I was in Abu Dhabi. Don Jr. was there, and who's the other guy was there?
Was it Eric?
I thought it was Don Jr., but maybe it was Eric. I mix them up sometimes. But Manafort was there, and Russell Pines, who's Bitcoin Policy Institute, very kind of deep into that world, knows everybody. I was speaking to him recently, and he said that his gut is pretty solid, that they're going to, one, protect the 200 somehow they've got, and two, mention an intention to grow it. The other thing he said that's not widely known, not out in the public much, is that in Abu Dhabi, one, the UAE has disclosed that they have somewhere between 300 and 400,000 coins. Oman has been mining and has coins, and Saudi Arabia has been mining and has coins. And all three of those countries have approached the Trump administration and said, look, we'd like to announce this, but we don't want to preempt you. Are you okay with us announcing this? And Manafort's response was, yes, we are, but just wait for us first. So I read that as pretty high likelihood that there are going to be some very positive developments as soon as Trump is inaugurated. So, could be disappointed, but I read it as a positive thing. So, look, it's all going in the right direction. Hopefully they'll investigate what happened with Operation Choke Point, and Caitlin will get her day in court, so that my investment in Custodia, looks a little better than it has recently. And, things are, in my view, politically looking up, but, we've still got a long way to go. And honestly, to me, the issue isn't really a political solution. The issue is a market solution. I mean, we need the market to continue buying this. We need more people to come into it. But having it be an issue where it's game theory at a nation state level, that's just a whole other thing, because nation states have a lot more money than, individuals, unless you take a lot of individuals. And so, this is what has me thinking that this cycle could kind of easily take us well beyond 200,000. So I'm pretty excited about all of that.
Well, thank you for that.
That's pretty wild about Saudi Arabia, if they're already in a position that they want to announce that they have Bitcoin. Like, I kind of theorized that they were moving that direction, just based off of their treasury reserves at the beginning of last year, and they publicized like a partnership with I think it was SBI.
Right, I saw that too.
And so I kind of theorized they were going that way, but it'd be wild to see them.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit of just hearsay from Russell and him hanging around, with people Matthew Pines and him hanging around. But he's in the right rooms and in the right circles to hear the kind of the scuttlebutt. So we'll just have to see. I mean, you could be wrong. But there's a lot of positive stuff going on at nation state level.
Yeah. And the only thing I wanted to add, sorry, Coleman, I kind of cut you off there, but I just wanted to mention, like, in terms of like, if a new, like Bretton Woods you mentioned, or like a new, like, monetary agreement, if that shifts to Bitcoin, I think it's in the, like, from the nation state level, if you're looking at, you're the U.S. government and you want to do this, it's in our government's interest to milk the dollar for all it's worth. So if you're not in Bitcoin, I think you're going to experience more and more inflation as the government kind of preps to shift over to, a Bitcoin standard. Because it's the easiest way for them to acquire it, just to print funny money and buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, as Taylor points out, the first government to do that wins. And it's a tricky balance, because if they go all in Bitcoin, like if they went and sold all their gold, which I don't even think they have, but if they did to buy Bitcoin, it would really trash the dollar. But to a degree, as Grohman points out, we do need to trash the dollar. The dollar is massively overvalued, and that's part of the problem that we're going through right now. So, I feel sorry for people we could be entering the suddenly phase, and I feel sorry for people who don't understand this stuff yet, because you're not going to get a do-over. I talk about this in the book. It's like when this stuff moves, it can move and move really hard and fast. And, people think they're too late now. Well, how are they going to feel when it's $1 million a coin? you know, I mean, then they, you know, and they're not going to, I mean, and by the way, it's going to 10, but you know, they're certainly going to feel more like they've missed it then than they do today. Right.
So we have some new, speakers that brought up, just a quick little rule for us at the Bitcoin Veterans. We're Bitcoin only. We don't shitcoin. So no altcoins. And I'm going to extend that out to ordinals as well. But Dombey, we have you up here. You're a veteran, of the show. So you know it, before I ask your question. And then we have Bang Lassie.
Yeah, Larry, you were touching on this fact that nation states are starting to accumulate, and you know, it adds an element of who knows what the top could be for this cycle. What are your thoughts? You know, I know you have a lot of experience with, you know, wealth offices and high net worth individuals and different folks in the space, but what is their take, or what is your view or feedback on how a nation state cycle, which I think many of us didn't expect until maybe next cycle, as you know, this is the institutional cycle. How does that accelerate also the institutional cycle where you have like pensions that are, there's no rush. We'll get into this eventually. You know, it's with the ETFs were just approved, that now end up seeing on the news nations, adding Bitcoin to the balance sheet, which then puts the pensions severely out of touch and behind in the fact that you would not expect a country to put, you know, an asset on the balance sheet or some kind of reserve, ahead of the institutions of that country or the world.
It's a great point, Dom. I mean, it's gotta be. I mean, everybody, you know, people have gotta be just sitting around themselves. I mean, it's like Saylor, when he first founded, he said something along the lines of, I was afraid everyone else going to buy it up before I could get any, you know. I mean, the FOMO, it's a real thing, and especially as it starts moving. And you know, this is similar to what happened like in Weimar Germany when their currency failed. I mean, it starts going up and people think, well, it's too expensive, I can't, this is the price of gold was going up in Weimar mark terms, you know, I can't. Well, no, not if you understand the whole picture. The theater's on fire, it's starting to fill with smoke, there are only a few exits, you know, you get all out. You know, and so that's kind of what's going on with fiat here. I mean, I think that's the metaphor. And so yeah, Dom, I think your point's very well taken. I mean, the institutions are going to be late. And one of the things that really kind of blows my mind, I was with Jesse Meyer recently, and we were talking about how, you know, how small the adoption is. I mean, you know, he's got a great chart that Saylor uses a lot, and he's got it on his site on Twitter. And it just shows the $900 trillion of global assets and, you know, the Bitcoin at around one. And so it's 0.2, you know, Bitcoin is 0.2% of all, 0.2% of all global assets. So we could 10x from here. It could go to $1 million of coin. It still would only be 2% of all global assets. I mean, it's like, good God, you know, the upside here, the asymmetry here is just, it's mind boggling. I mean, it just is absolutely mind boggling. And yet only those of us, you know, that are on this call and otherwise are Bitcoiners are crazy enough to fully get it and understand it and believe in it. And hopefully this book will address that. But I think you're right, Dom. I mean, it's, you know, look, a couple things have happened in this cycle or in the last 3 years that have just blown my mind, or 2 years, actually a year, have blown my mind. I mean, one, I didn't think the ETF was going to get approved. I thought they'd figure out some way to scuttle that, but they didn't. And, you know, I'm sure seen the growth of the ETF asset chart. I mean, fastest growing ETF ever by just orders of magnitude. I mean, just crushed all the others. And now, yeah, nation states. I mean, it's like, you know, as Saylor says, I mean, this is the gold rush. I mean, we are right at the point of inflection of the gold rush, and it's going to get nutty. I mean, it's going to, and as Saylor also said, I was on a stage with him once and we were talking about this. He said, you know, so many people are going to sell too early. You know, they're, and in fact, I know some people who I put into it at 15 or 20 or 50, you know, and they're like, well, geez, gosh, it's gone awfully far, awfully fast. I got to get out, you know, and they sold some at 100 or whatever. And I'm like, no, that's not the right move, you know, but there'll be a lot of that. There'll be a lot of people. I mean, in fact, you saw it. There were ETF outflows right after Jan 1 or Jan 2, because I'm sure what had happened is there are people who bought it in early in the year. They had a really good gain. They didn't want to pay the taxes in last year. So until 2025, and boom, they sold it, you know. Well, they're going to regret that because they're going to have to buy it back at a higher price. So, You know, it's very hard for the average person to get their head around something like this because we've never actually had something like this. I mean, it's new. Every asset in the world has, and historically, we've been able to create more of it. And we've never had an asset that you couldn't create more of, that there's a fixed supply of. That's different. And so therefore the price is going to behave in a different fashion. And, you know, the sooner you accept that, the sooner investors and outsiders accept that, the better off they're going to be, which is why we say you get Bitcoin at the price you deserve, you know? And so hopefully, you know, this book will help more people accept it, more average people accept it younger and earlier, such that they, you know, they can solve for the crappy life that the fiat masters have given them, you know, which, I mean, you know, the fact, I mean, somebody said, you know, there was a great tweet, I retweeted it recently about talking, you know, you work 50 years of your life to save up a certain amount of money. And then in 2 years, COVID comes along and the government is 40% of your savings. So 20 some odd years of your life, they just stole it from you. They just, I mean, by devaluing the money you worked for, they just stole it. I mean, it's insane. And that, why this is working so well, because the other side, it's just, they've gotten to the point where they're just so greedy and piggish and broken that, you know, I mean, even though even a caveman could understand it, you know what I mean? So it's a mess, right?
Yeah, Larry, that's a great point with the parameters and stuff. I'm going to take what you were saying and put it on a recording and just play it for some of the pension funds that I have conversations with, because again, I always tell them, hey, your parameters of alternative assets, they don't apply to this. The financial landscape has changed. You have a vehicle now that can keep pace and actually outpace other vehicles. But when you don't change your parameters and you have, you know, the auto sale of profits at 10% gain, et cetera, you're theoretically, basically, you're in this vehicle that can keep pace, but you're getting out and you're walking instead of staying in the vehicle. So they have some learning to do. And like anyone's cycle, the institutions are going to have to learn across all the, you would think with all the knowledge they have of the cycles that have happened before, that they go, okay, we get it. Don't sell too soon. We get it. Don't shit coin. We get it. But they're going to have to learn it, unfortunately, through the iron, like everyone else.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Bang or Fang Lassie, you have your hand.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me on, and a great honor to speak to you directly, Lawrence. You've been a key kind of person in the space that has helped me understand Bitcoin over the years, and it's really exciting to see you release your book, and even to read the feedback from the likes of Max Kaiser or people that have read the outline or the first draft of the book. But I'm going to support it. I'm looking forward to buying it, but I'm an audiobook guy, right? And I just hope, like, God loves Guy Swan. I love Guy Swan. Every Bitcoin book I ever listened to was narrated by Guy Swan. But for your own sake and for the sake of listeners, maybe aim for, you know, like in any old financial book, if you listen to Rothbard or even a Dalio book, you will have a, you know, an old man, a whiskey drinking, cigar smoking kind of voice. And I'd say that would do you well in your style, I believe. But do you have any hints on who will be narrating this?
I've announced it. You haven't looked at the links and stuff. Walker America is going to read it for me. He's got a great voice, and I've known him for a long time. I originally at the Coin Show in Miami in 2021, one of the first ones, I met he and his wife. We had a great dinner, a group dinner there, and so I've gotten very close to him, and so he's going to be the guy reading it. I'd like to read it myself. I just don't have the time. I've got these commitments to a couple of funds I'm involved with, and furthermore, I don't know how to really read a book. The whole process is structuring it, setting it up, but so Walker's going to be the guy who reads it. I was tempted to go with Guy. I know a lot of people have used him, but I also, I know Walker is a good guy, so I decided to go with Walker.
Our class. Thanks for sharing. And would you have any date on the audiobook release?
I don't.
Not yet.
I don't. I mean, it depends on how quickly he gets it done. I mean, the idea is to get it done fairly quickly, but I imagine the print will be out. I mean, the print should be out, you know, for the Kindle, I put it in at February 14. But I really hope to be by substantially. This week's actually a key week. I get back a couple of drafts of the layout where I'll be able to see how well they've done in laying it out in book format. And, I don't want to send out junk. So I've given myself some time. I mean, if it turns out the layout's really good and there aren't that many corrections just to make, a book could be out in a week or two, but I don't want to promise that because I've never been through this before. I don't know exactly how it works. So, but.
Okay, class. Thank you very much for having me on stage anyway. And I'll get both the hard copy and the audio.
Oh, I appreciate Cheers, that. Mate. Thanks for the support. I appreciate it.
And in case you arrived late, if you could, we have a link up in the Nest, to help get traction, for Larry and his book. If you pre-order the Kindle, it starts increasing its chart rating on Amazon, and then he'll go ahead and repost when the hard copy will be coming out, or the physical copy, so you can cancel it.
And feel free to cancel your Kindle order. Yeah, I'll be out on Twitter very loudly saying, hey, all coming, and if you want hard copy, not Kindle, cancel Kindle, reorder hard copy. And of course, that'll mess up their algorithm too. They'll get a bunch more orders. So, yeah, hopefully we can get it up into the top selling books so that, you know, it gets traction.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything to help out a fellow Bitcoiner. Before I jump over to you, Bitcoin Pilot, I just want to take a quick moment and say a thank you to our partners, Punchplate. It's important to host or have your own self wallet, and you have to stamp your seeds. Don't leave that on a piece of paper. Stamp it on a metal plate. Check them out at punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com, and Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining. Use the code BTCVETS for 5% off your order. And if you pay with Bitcoin, you get additional 10% off. So potential 15% off your order, solosatoshi.com, and Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th in Juneau. This is going to be an amazing conference. This is a family friendly conference as well. So bring your spouse, bring the kids, bring your in-laws. It's going to be an amazing time. I'm telling you, Alaska is an amazing place to visit, especially in the summer. Feel free to buy a one-way ticket with that because you're going to be hard pressed to come back to the lower 48. BitcoinAlaska.org. And Lawrence, I know that, Wade's been speaking with you. We'd love to get you up there to join.
Yeah, I'll see. It depends on what my family commitments are. There's a lot of things I'd like to go to, but I won't, but we'll see. It's certainly a possibility.
Oh, that'd be awesome if you could make it. But I'm going to throw it over to you, Bitcoin Pilot. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, Lawrence, I just had a couple questions. You've mentioned a few times that you're working on other funds, either you're I'm assuming, lead investor on those or you're advising those. As a fund manager in the Bitcoin era, I'm just curious, are these Bitcoin only funds? And if they're not, normally a fund might use something like the S&P as a benchmark. Are you starting to use Bitcoin and Bitcoin returns as a benchmark now? I only ask, I run a small fund and, you know, I keep other investments in there just to show people, essentially show my people that are investing how poorly every other investment is doing against Bitcoin. We're mostly Bitcoin at this point, because they've seen the returns over the last 7 years. I'm just curious how you guys are managing that.
Yeah.
As a Bitcoin only or non-Bitcoin only fund.
So I'll give you the background on that. So I've got a legacy fund that has, it's basically before Bitcoin, most people know I'm a gold guy. And so I was in the gold and silver mining space from 2008, which is when I got radicalized for sound money, until today. I still have this fund and I was able to talk my investors who all invested in me to buy gold mining companies because traditionally pre-Bitcoin, that was the best way to protect from inflation. We should have some Bitcoin in there, and it's grown to be 15-20% of that. But the other 80% are still those gold and silver miners. And by the way, I think gold and silver are going to, you know, continue to go up as well as fails. I mean, it's not like, you know, Bitcoin's going to completely replace them overnight. But over time, I will transition out of that fund. The fund is still actually on a bit of a drawdown. It had a high water mark right at the end of it. In COVID, the fund went up 1 year, it went up 98%, the next 122%. So if you were with me in 2018, you made 4x your money in 2 years. But to be honest, I then drew it down, you know, 45-50% over the next few years that Powell tightened. We've clawed a lot of that back out of the high water mark yet. And I really want to get everybody in that fund out and out at a profit. And I think when the next big print comes, coming, that's the point of the book, that I will, that and at a point in time, I'll probably unwind that fund and close it down. Fund one. Fund two, with Foss, Mark Moss, David Foley, and James Lapp, I started we started a fund called, the Bitcoin Fund, which is only Bitcoin. And it's a mixture of public and private in it. So it's got some venture deals in it, but it's not exclusively venture deals. It's got some Bitcoin in it, and it's got a lot of Bitcoin equity related things. Of course, the biggest of which was MicroStrategy, and of course that was a very good thing to hold last year too. They've been crushing it, and they're about to raise funds. We are about to raise funds too. I say they because I'm not involved in the data management. I'm an advisor. James and David really are the two guys running it, but they're out right now raising another fund. And if you know you're a investor, you can participate in that. I mean, the minimum is 250 or something, but In both cases, we benchmark them against Bitcoin. The gold thing has done poorly against Bitcoin. But you know, gold investors, and I had some gold investors leave me when I told them I was doing Bitcoin. Gold investors are, you know, they don't want the ones, a lot of them who are in there, they just can't handle the volatility of Bitcoin. They look at those drawdowns, they're too old, they just say, I don't want that. But I was able to get them to take a slice of it, which obviously, I mean, I was buying, in that fund, I was buying Bitcoin at 5 and 10,000. And of course, it's done pretty well compared to that. And so they're happy. But it was a couple percent, right? So obviously it's gone up a lot. Now it's a bigger percentage, but it's still, and I haven't sold any of it, but it's, you know, it's not the central focus of the first fund, right? Does that answer your question kind of in terms of where I'm?
Yeah. I mean, when I try to explain our investing thesis, which is slowly, or actually I should say, I mean, I started 8 years ago and then the fund started 4 years ago. And, you know, I used to not include, I used to include, you know, our prospectus every year would be a new cap table and show how we've done and whatnot. And, this last year I started putting the other investments that we've made, but pricing them in what they could have bought had we used it to buy Bitcoin instead, really to show the investors that like, hey, this is where our money should be. And if we can't beat Bitcoin, then we shouldn't be investing in it. And I think the people that are invested in it are really starting to see that as not the risk-free rate, but the benchmark. Instead of thinking about it in S&P or in fiat standard, they're going, okay, can we get more Bitcoin? And the answer is usually no. Like you said, MicroStrategy has been sort of an exception to that in this last year. And we've taken some leverage to get some more Bitcoin, things like that. But, Lawrence, you and I met, back in 2022. And I know you were at the time you were investing in some young guys who were sort of promising or trying to promise that idea of like, of added returns on Bitcoin. And generally my experience has been that those don't usually pan out.
It's hard. I mean, it's hard. I mean,
it's very hard. As it should be. It should be hard.
Yeah. I mean, the venture business in Bitcoin will produce some really big winners. And, you know, and we have, I'm both at EMA, which is my gold fund, and at the Bitcoin Opportunity Fund, we have participated to some degree in some of the venture people. I mean, 1031 is one and Ego Death is another. But, and in part that's to see deals, you know, and to get exposure to things so we can pick and choose what we like. But yeah, I mean, it's, look, I met with Saylor a couple of years ago and he said, if I were doing a Bitcoin venture fund, I'd put 80% in Bitcoin, take the other 20% and see if I could beat it. And if the other 20% went to zero, so what?
Sure. Especially if Bitcoin goes to a million, who cares?
Right. So yeah, I mean, it's when you've got an asset that's as good as Bitcoin, it's hard to beat it. But that doesn't, you know, if you believe in this whole movement, you know, we got to support the companies that are supporting the asset. And so I think there's even a, you know, there's a non-pro reason to be participating in investing in Bitcoin related things, in my opinion.
Certainly.
You know, now you.
Well, thank you for your answer. Yeah, I appreciate it, Lawrence. Yeah. Thank you.
So Larry, we're getting to the top of the hour. I want to be mindful of your time. Or do you have a hard stop at 10?
No, I'm good for another maybe 15, 20 minutes. Probably beyond that, I gotta go get some stuff done, but I'm happy to go a little further.
Yeah, Jason, I'm going to open it up to everybody else on the panel. If you have more questions, please, let's fire them.
Yeah, I would love to know, you know, I mentioned I write some articles and stuff and some of the stuff I think I'm, you know, knowledgeable about. And I always surprise myself with like how much I learn, when I'm doing research for something that I'm writing. So I'd be interested to know, like, what, if there was anything in particular that as you're researching and writing this, that, kind of like struck you that you were like, found particularly interesting that you found while you're doing your research?
That's a question. Yeah, there were a ton of things that I found. I mean, I dug back deep into the historical records. I found like the War of 1812 as an example. I mean, basically every war the United States has ever had has been financed via fiat or via suspension of city payments, because nobody wants to pay the taxes to have a war, which is one of the great promises of Bitcoin, that if we get rid of the inflation tax, you know, they're not going to be able to afford wars. And it was fascinating that, you know, and even the War of 1812, you know, they issued bills that they couldn't support, and then they suspended specie, which means the bills couldn't be exchanged for gold, which is real money. And then that stood up in the Supreme Court, and off we went. And they kind of did that throughout the entire 1800s. So it's clearly a case of, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. I mean, you know, Lincoln did it with the gold, you know, with the greenbacks. And, you know, when they started issuing greenbacks in 1862, you know, they were worth, in theory, 100 cents on the dollar in gold. And by the end of the war, they were worth 30 cents on the dollar on gold, you know, and that was just pure monetary dilution. And then it took them from the end of the war until the mid-1870s to get back on the gold standard because of all the inflation that had occurred. So, yeah, I mean, I was kind of shocked pleasantly surprised to see how this thesis has been playing out over and over and over again for years, centuries, you know, decades, centuries. I mean, and what's interesting is, you know, there were all these historical figures who...
Sorry, Petro, you have a hot mic, if you could just mute yourself.
Yeah. There were all these historical figures who basically understood the cotillion effect. Do you know what I mean? This is not new. You know, we act like we invented this problem or we discovered this problem. I mean, you know, Garfield saw this problem. I mean, there are all kinds of people who saw it. I mean, Daniel Webster saw it. I mean, Jefferson saw it. So, you know, the problem that we've got is a recurring problem. And the solution that Satoshi has presented us with is truly a world-changing event. And I talk about this in the book. I mean, I think that finance is going to be, you know, looked at as like, you know, AD, you know, before Christ and after Christ. And some people, Chris, are using a religious comparison, but I think it's appropriate. You know, there will be finance before Bitcoin and finance after Bitcoin. That's how different everything is going to be, you know, in this world as we go forward. And, you know, the thing I find kind of fun and interesting to watch is just the way TradFi guys' heads are exploding. I mean, can't get their arms around it, you know. I mean, I was at the New Orleans Investment Conference, and I saw James Grant, who I respect enormously. He's a great monetary scholar. He runs a conference. He's written a ton of books. I used one of his books in my book. And I talked to him about it, and I, you know, here's the biggest monetary change in 1,000 years. And I talked to him about it, and I said, look, James, this is digital sound money. It's digital scarcity, therefore it's digital gold. And he just scoffed, and he said, well, maybe after you've got 1,000 years of history under, I'll consider that it's money. And I was just like, dude, grow fuck up. I mean, you know, so the Wright brothers started flying, but he hadn't been flying for the prior couple thousand years. The airplane is relevant. I mean, get a fucking grip. I mean, I was stunned at the obtuseness of this TradFi guy who I used to respect. I think he's a dolt. You know, but I see that. I mean, you know, you compare, you know, there's some great book that, compare the returns on Bitcoin to the returns on UF. I mean, you know, look, isn't investing all about getting returns? I mean, how can these people ignore it? It kind of stuns me. But, you know, they'll come around and they'll get a price they deserve. It'll be higher than today's price. And so, you know, it's kind of fun that we're all front running them, right?
Yeah, and in support of your biblical reference, I'll just say that fiat allows so much like of the evil stuff our government does, you know, you mentioned the wars and stuff. So, you know, Bitcoin being able to fix that is, maybe not biblical, but close to, you know, if it can end all these meaningless and pointless wars and all the suffering that comes with it. So
yeah, let me just say I'll add another one. I just listened to Preston and Luke Groman, and Groman had just a great analogy. And he said, look, you know, he said, Preston asked him, said, well, why is the U.S. in such a, you know, dire straits? Why are we in this big ass mess that we're in? And Groman's answer was perfect. He said, well, look at it this way. Imagine you went, you were a company, and imagine you went and you did an $8 trillion acquisition. You bought something for $8 trillion. And it turns out that what you bought was a fraud, that it didn't have $8 trillion. And so you had to write it off to zero. Okay. And then furthermore, it turned out the thing you bought had environmental liability or something, you know, like asbestos. You had to clean it up for the next X years. And that was going to cost you $350 billion a year, you know, to support. He said, well, that's what happened in the U.S. We spent $8 trillion in the Middle East trying to secure Afghanistan, and we gave it back. And then trying to secure Iraq, which we did, so now the Chinese can buy all their oil, right? And we damaged so many veterans that now we've got a $350 billion a year tab to keep those veterans, you know, supported, you know, on a go-forward basis. And it's like we did a stupid acquisition. We pissed away $8 trillion. And we've got a veteran liability on a go-forward basis. It's like, I mean, he used the words which I love from, you know, A Few Good Men. He said it was just galactically stupid. And that's what happened. And, you know, this is all laid out in the book. But, you know, America has just been so grossly and badly mismanaged. I mean, you know, look, Dick Cheney's rich, you know, so he can go get drunk and shoot guys in the face with a shotgun. But, you know, how does that help the rest of us? The rest of us pay more for everything. And, you know, the fact that these people have not been brought to account, it just disgusts me. It just absolutely disgusts me. And again, you know, there's a lot of that disgust coming out in this book, which is why, you know, it may not make the mainstream. I mean, like I say, I've gone right up to the pale. Maybe I've gone over it. I don't know. But I didn't pull my punches. I mean, I think the people who've read it would agree with that.
Do you think the ship is starting to right itself though, Larry? When you look what's going on in Europe and Canada, like you just...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I love the phrase nature is healing, right? I mean, look, yeah, Trudeau resigning, that'd be great, right? I mean, it's, you know, Le Pen possibly winning, that'd be great. You know, Trump winning, I mean, you know, can you hear us now, right? I mean, that was the David Brooks article on Trump in the New York Times. It's referenced in the book. I mean, yeah, no, The plebs know we're being screwed, and, you know, we're not going to take it anymore. You know, those of us who are still around, who haven't, you know, stroked out or, you know, succumbed to alcohol or drugs or deaths of despair, like so many have, but, you know, the rest of us are going to fight back. And, you know, numerically, you know, the people who are running this broken system, the crooked elites that run the game, you know, we got them outnumbered badly. And so what we, you know, They had an asymmetric information advantage when they controlled all the channels, but they don't control that anymore. I mean, you know, Rogan, Tucker, all these other things, podcasts, all you guys. I mean, we're coming back at them. And this whole, you know, there's a chapter in the book that says why we will be saved. It's called decentralization. And, you know, basically the microprocessor has saved humanity in my view. And, you know, it started with, you know, the computer, and then it went to the internet. The internet has completely changed the game. And then from the internet, we went to sound money, which is going to take it to the next level. And, you know, we're going to live in a much more decentralized world because we reached peak centralization, World War II. We slaughtered 70 million people in 6 years. And that's not going to happen again, thankfully. And primarily because, you know, people act in their own self-interest, and technology is allowing everybody to understand what their self-interest really is and not listen to some liars at the top who promote their view of self-interest so that they can, you know, make hundreds of millions of dollars, right? That's the difference that's taking place. It's great. I mean, it's just great. And we, you know, there's just no doubt we're going to win. My biggest, you know, bugaboo is just, you know, I just want it to happen faster. You know, it's like, faster, faster, faster. I'm not young. And so I want, on a timeline, I just want to speed it up as much as we can.
Well, that was good.
To counter that, the longer it takes to happen, the more Bitcoin I can actually accumulate before it's out of reach. So.
Well, that's right. I mean, yeah, there are all kinds of arguments on both sides of that, but yeah.
Well, I think the slowly part is coming to an end though. I really do believe, and I think Larry, you're the same way, that Trump is going to do an SBR and the ripple effects from it are just going to be something that no one's really prepared for.
I think that's right. I really do think that's right. And, you know, Samson might be right. You know, $1 million. I mean, I don't know. That feels out there to me, but who knows? I mean, we have not lived through one of these before, so we just don't know. You know, we've never had a commodity that was completely inelastic. You know, it just, the supply does not respond to the price. Full stop. That's friggin' huge. Digital scarcity is friggin' huge. It's like, you know, it's like the airplane, the automobile, the printing, whatever. I mean, the book talks about, you should go, hasn't listened to it, go listen to Michael Saylor, Atlas Society speech, and let him walk you through technological innovations of the last 2,000 years. It's stunning. It's like a masterclass in what's going on. And you come out of it and you're like, yep, this is what's next. You know, we'll be, everything will be priced in, our kids will, and kids will be buying things in Satoshis. You know.
I can't see hands, but I see, Shane is back up here, and I wanted to give him a chance to say his piece before, you run out of time there. So Shane, if you had something to say.
Hey, yeah, good morning, everybody. Hope you can hear me okay. Larry, always good to have you part of Bitcoin Veterans, man. And, been in and out a little bit this morning doing some tests with, some live streams over on Zapstream for Noster. But, I gotta say, I'm excited to read your book.
Thanks.
When you're looking at, you know, the push here now that the strategic Bitcoin reserve might be coming in, you know, you've been a part of, you know, reinvestment in this community. And I think that's, you know, one of those things where as the SBR comes in and we begin to see Bitcoin swell even more where, you know, the return on investment here, you know, I'm not saying anybody should cash out, but spending your Bitcoin inside of the Bitcoin community is a really big thing. Where have you seen this, the best utilized? Like, and what are you excited about? I mean, to see Bitcoin swell and to have all these guys that have been in for maybe 2-3 cycles now starting to, you know, divorce themselves from this hamster wheel, and reinvest. Where are you seeing the most excitement, especially in your own, you know, daily dealings?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm excited that, you know, more and more people are becoming aware. I mean, I was in Whole Foods a month ago and some guy who was a truck driver for one of those, office delivery places, cause he had the hat on, you know, I can't remember the name of it now, but, you know, came up to me and said, are you Larry? I said, yeah. He said, shit, I've been listening to your podcast for years and I've been stacking like crazy. Thank you, man. You really changed my life. I got to tell you, that was like the best thing that's happened to me in 6 months. I was like, holy shit. And maybe being a loudmouth isn't a stupid thing to do, right? I mean, I'm really excited about the fact that we're starting to be taken seriously and that people are learning about this stuff and they're moving in this direction. And, you know, I mean, I look at this guy and I don't think he probably doesn't make a lot of money, right? But that doesn't really matter. His life has gotten better because he figured out how to save and sound money. And, you know, that's what I want for everybody. That's what I want for common and average people all over the world, you know, to not get screwed by these bastards. And so, you know, I'm just really excited to see that spreading, you know, and I think we're going to see a lot more of it, you know, and that's really great. And it's not just, I mean, obviously he's excited because he saved some money and number has gone up, but it's better than that. I mean, it's going to make the world a better place. I mean, I mean, Jeff Booth and I talk about this quite a bit and it's like, it's just going to make the world a much, much better. And boy, do we ever need that? Cause this isn't the world I grew up in. That was another impetus for writing the book was just, I remember what it was like to be in America and be a teenager in the '70s and it was so much better. It was just so much better. We've lost so much as a result of going off the gold standard and centralization of the world. It's just been horrible. And that's where we can go back to that. I know we can because, you know, when we restore sound money, a lot of these problems will get fixed, you know.
Larry, I like that point. I think, people a lot of times in the space or just coming to it think that you need a ton of capital in order to have Bitcoin make a difference for you. And really what we've seen is it really just takes time and perseverance. Can you speak to that a little bit?
No, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, that time preference is, I mean, Safe introduced the idea. I mean, the Austrians before him did, but he really brought it to the forefront and time preference is the key thing and compounding is the key thing. I mean, there was I read the recent article, I think it was in Morgan House's book about how, you know, Buffett made like 70% of his net worth he accumulated between age 65 and age 85. I mean, the advantage of being in a good investment that compounds over time, people don't understand. I mean, get a financial calculator, put a number in there, present value, put 10, 15, whatever rate of return you want to in it, and then enter number of periods, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. I mean, if you have wealth and you compound it over multiple decades, it's impossible not for the number not to get just stunningly big. And so, you know, it's time in the market, not timing the market. That's really, really important. And so, yeah, I mean, I my kids have Bitcoin and I know that by the time they retire, they're going to be just fine. And I think, you know, and also the other thing is dollar cost averaging or being willing to buy the dips. I mean, I started buying at 400. I bought a bunch in 2017 at 16,000 right at the peak. And then it went to 10, I doubled down, then it went to 4 or 5, I doubled down again. And, you know, it's just, you gotta be willing to stay with it. And, you know, by the way, this run will, say it takes us to somewhere between 200 and 500, say it takes us to 1,000,000. There will be a 40 or 50% correction off this. I think the 80 and 90% corrections are gone. But I think there'll be, you know, people will get too far out over their skis, people will use leverage, there'll be nutty stuff being done, etc. And there'll be a correction. But, you know, my view is that'll be a buying opportunity if you're, you know, if your time frame is 5, 10, 20 years, which it should be if you're an investor. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Larry, I know we're running up against your time. So is there any other final comments or closing remarks?
No, not really. I mean, I would just say, please, 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 if you can, find the $10 and buy the book and tell other people to do it. I just want to try and hit their algorithms. You know, it's all. This is all a viral game, right? And, you know, the way we, if we want to support Bitcoin, we've got to support things that support Bitcoin. The book is a very good tool for orange pilling people. I think most people when they read it will agree with that. And so, you know, $10 isn't a lot, you know, and I'm not making that much off it. It's surprising how much Amazon and all the other people take. And I'm giving some away to Alex Gladstein and Dennis Porter. And, you know, if you can, just buy the book and support others to buy the book so that we can get the thing to go viral. And, because, you know, we need to orange pill all our fellow citizens. And, this will lead to the death of fiat, which will lead to a much better world, which is really the goal, the long-term goal I think we all hold. So.
Yeah. If you're out there in the audience now, I just retweeted, the link that Larry shared on his own profile. If you guys will go out there, either buy the book or share the book, whatever we can do to help Larry out here. He's put a lot of time and effort into Bitcoin in the space. And I mean, just absolutely phenomenal, character to have here. I mean, he's done so much for it. Just go out there and support him the best you can. If you don't have that $10, you know, ask somebody here. We'll give you $10 to go buy that book and hand it out for you. But
yeah, and hopefully I think you'll think, you know, people think it's worth the money. I mean, I put a lot of work into it. I think you'll see that. Max agreed. So, you know, it is what it is, right? It's the best I could do.
Yeah, thanks again, Larry. I'm actually, I'm really excited about reading this book. I wasn't sure what to expect before, but now speaking to you, definitely on board and excited to read it. It sounds like.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate you giving me the platform. Really appreciate you letting me sell some books on your show. So, thank you. And, you know, big supporter of your group and know all the guys there very well. And we'll see at the conferences. Anyone who sees me at a conference, don't hesitate. Step up. I'll sign the book. I'm not, you know, I'm not unapproachable. Unless you're a central writer, in which case I'll punch you in the face. But, yeah, so. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Larry, for taking your morning to spend with us. And you're always welcome back on the show. And I would like to get you back on here once
When we got a release, we could do another one. Cause then people will be able to actually go and get it and get instant gratification. So that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much. And, we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks guys. See y'all. Bye bye.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. And for everyone out there, the Bitcoin Veterans is having a DC BitDevs meetup at the MSRT conference on January 23rd. There's a link up in the nest there, so feel free to click on that. But what a great show. Again, I've always been a huge fan of Larry. I think he was one of the ones that really helped me get down in my journey with Bitcoin. I think it was on a What Bitcoin Did podcast. And I was coming back home from Colorado, and I was listening to it like 2 or 3 times just to absorb all the information he gave. So it's always an awesome opportunity when he comes up here to pick his brain. So I do want to thank everybody out in the audience who was listening. Everyone that joined the panel today, we had a ton of guests and we had a ton of listeners. So I do appreciate that. Join us again tomorrow at 10 a.m. We'll be doing this every weekday, Monday through Friday at that same time, 10 a.m. Eastern time. I believe we will be having a Bitcoin video podcast this Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Shane, I'm going to call you up real quick. Who's going to be, what are we talking about?
So 9 p.m. new time Tuesday night. This is going to help us get, Gabe and Jordan back on. I think we're also going to have, Average Gary join us a little bit tomorrow night. We just did our test stream to Noster, and it was successful. So we're looking forward to expanding into the Noster territory now, where we can send zaps back and forth. But it will just be the core group, and I think we're going to get into a lot of what's been going on, a little bit of 2024, but looking forward here into 2025. There's a lot going on. I think you know us. We talk about geopolitics quite a bit. I think it's kind of, you know, one of those things that's our forte, having the experience and the intelligence connections that we do have. And I think you're not going to want to miss tomorrow night, 9 p.m. new time Eastern. Looking forward to it and being back on the air.
Excellent. And then one last thing, I apologize, I forgot to mention a little earlier, but the Operation Bitcoin virtual class will be starting next week on the 23rd. So it's designed for Bitcoiners who are new in the Bitcoin industry. It's a great class. It's put on by Gabe Lord. Highly recommend you reach out. It's operationbitcoin.io. Follow Gabe Lord. He's always posting information on it. But again, it's a free workshop. It is limited in space, so reach out and try and secure your spot on the 23rd when enrollment opens. But on that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show. Again, thank you everybody who tuned in, and I'll see you all tomorrow morning. But don't shitcoin. It's like fishing in a pond that's already drained.